Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Self-Help Podcast. We've got an interview coming up, haven't we, Sean?
Yeah, and this is something that we're going to do more of. We're going to invite people in.
Indeed, some clever people around the world doing cool things.
Yeah.
We're talking here with Dr. David Cox, who is the Chief Medical Officer at Headspace. Go to headspace.com for more information, but it's they offer meditation for the world, don't they?
Yeah, I reckon that Headspace is probably one of the most useful apps I've ever come across.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing service, amazing website. They reckon that Andy, who started Headspace, Andy Puddicombe, is doing for meditation what Jamie Oliver has done for food. And I think that's probably quite real.
Yeah.
And he's making meditation, and most importantly, mindfulness meditation, available to everybody in an easy-to-digest way.
Well, yeah, meditation for modern living is what is the tagline on the website.
Yeah.
Head over there and have a look and get the app. Dr. David Cox here, who we're going to talk to. He's responsible for overseeing all the science and medically related research work.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of science in this interview, but it's pretty fascinating stuff if you want to dive into it.
Yeah, and I think that the phenomenal thing about that is that mindfulness has become such mainstream work in the West that we can now do degrees and doctorates, master's degrees in mindfulness psychology, because this is now real mainline stuff. It's no kind of Eastern weird thing. This is here in the science.
Finally, I bet you're delighted to see.
Yeah, it's great.
Thing.
Yeah, and people like David, with his skills, are bringing that science out into the community, so that it becomes something which is valid. It's no longer voodoo. This is real. It's physiological, it's psychological, it's emotional. It's good.
Cool. So we recorded this in London a few weeks ago.
Yep.
So we're going to head off down there shortly. Yes. There's a bit of background noise. We were on the 15th floor of an office block there, but we were with Rethink,
yeah. Mental health charity.
Which is quite apt, really. You did a talk there, and actually in David's kind of profile, it says he's interested, you know, he works a lot in kind of mental health areas, which is kind of...
But again, massive evidence of the effects of mindfulness on mental illness. Fabulous. Halving medication, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, David, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
I guess my first question is, what is Headspace?
Sure. So Headspace is a company whose mission is to improve the health and happiness of the whole world. Which is, you know, quite a large, far-reaching thing to do. So the immediate next question is, how?
Yeah.
So what we're doing is we have an IT platform, so you can get this through your smartphone, any variety, or just through the internet. And through that is delivered special content which teaches you the techniques of mindfulness and meditation. And it is those things in particular that we think, if more people do, ideally everybody did, would significantly and quantifiably improve the health and happiness of the whole world.
Do you have any statistics about how many people are actually using Headspace?
At the moment, yeah. Our content is used in 150 countries by about 700,000 people. When you break it down, it's, I think, 45% male, 55% female. And what's really interesting, actually, is when you look at the age ranges, right the way from, you know, kind of teenager up through to 65, there's a little bit of a hump in the sort of IT savvy 20s. But other than that, it's pretty much flat right the way across. So there's, you know, about 7-8% in each of the deciles.
Yeah.
It's genuinely being used by everybody everywhere. And there doesn't seem to be a preponderance to any particular group or location, and we just want to spread the word.
Sure.
Brilliant.
What about your role with Headspace then?
Sure. So my role, fairly grand title of Chief Medical Officer.
Yeah, I like that.
But what that means is that my background is as a previously practicing NHS doctor, and what I do within the company is oversee all of our research relationships with universities and research institutions, and generally kind of keep a track of the science. I mean, there's a explosion in research into mindfulness at the moment. In the last 5 years, there's been a 285% increase in the number of studies done on mindfulness.
Yeah.
And it's now at the rate of there's pretty much a paper a day published.
Wow.
On mindfulness. So, you know, it takes quite a lot of effort just keeping on top of all of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, clearly then for the right-brained thinkers of the world who kind of want to know the stats and the proof of why and how something works, you know, my job is to stay on top of that and contribute to it. Mm-hmm. So that we can talk about that with people such as yourselves.
Yeah, that's great. from that research point of view, one of the bits of evidence is that mindfulness practice changes the way that the brain functions. Do you have anything to say around that? What's actually happening in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is absolutely fascinating. It's something that's come out of fMRI, functional MRI scanning, where, you know, you can see changes in blood flow in different parts of the brain in real time, more or less. And I think there's kind of two ways of looking at it. If you're more of a kind of, you know, evolutionary behaviourist type, then there's a really nice thing, I'll do in a second. In the brain, the amygdala is a part of the ancient brain, and it's all to do with your emotions and your kind of split-second thinking, and it's you know, based on survival instinct. Mm-hmm. And that's the seat of that bit. And then the frontal cortex right at the front of your head is more to do with executive decision-making, planning, the logic, the thinking.
Yeah.
And often those two are kind of in opposition to each other.
Yeah.
And hopefully in a fairly nice balance.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be that what we think is happening through mindfulness meditation is that you are strengthening the frontal cortex so that you become able to have more flexibility at controlling that balance between the ancient brain and the logical thinking brain. Why might you need to do that? Well, because I'm sure lots of people know that feeling of red mist is a good way of describing it. So red mist is just one of many different instances where your ancient brain, the amygdala, has kind of taken over and your fear, fight, flight response has kicked in. And often people do things or say things or feel things that afterwards they think, I regret that a little bit and I wasn't thinking clearly. And that's, you know, it's in the words, I wasn't thinking clearly.
Mm.
And it's because at that moment, the amygdala had very much more control over the balance than the frontal cortex.
Mm.
Mindfulness helps redress that balance a bit, which means that you have a bit more control over yourself and your experiences and perception of reality.
Mm.
So that's a kind of very physical, neurological, neuroscientific, neuroanatomical way of looking at it. Another way is, it comes from psychology, which I like, and I'm sure you probably know more about this than I do. So the theory of relational frame theory, which is the underpinnings of a kind of therapy called ACT, which is acceptance and commitment therapy, of which mindfulness is a very big part. And relational frame theory says that, or postulates that, two things that are very frequently the cause of psychological ill health are things called experiential avoidance and cognitive fusion. So what do those terms mean? Cognitive fusion means that the individual is bound up in the things that they're thinking and feeling. And so from their perceptive perspective, they believe those things to be absolute and true.
Yeah.
Rather than a different perspective, which is to say, I'm a human being, I'm one of 7 billion. The thoughts that are going on in my head are known only to me. They exist in my head and nobody else's, and they are just going on. They don't necessarily constitute the absolute truth. They certainly don't affect anything outside my head unless I choose to behave in a certain way as a result of them. So the difference between those two perspectives is quite a large one. And the one where you're totally bound up in your thoughts and kind of totally fused to them is believed to be at the root of a lot of psychological ill health. The other one, experiential avoidance, is again, comes from our evolutionary roots in wanting to avoid bad things. So what it says is, you know, if you have an unpleasant experience, pain, grief, you know, loss, whatever it may be, your natural response is to want to avoid that. You could, you know, some people physically avoid unpleasant stimuli by trying to leave, you know, bodily moving themselves away from it.
Yeah.
Psychologically, people avoid things by denial. Everybody knows about denial. or trying to superimpose something else. And this is when we get into the nasty territory of where people are effectively self-medicating with alcohol or illicit drugs. And again, that is just trying to replace what they are would otherwise be feeling with something else that to them is more palatable.
Yeah. It's certainly true with the when I'm in the NHS and I'm working with staff groups there, and we reckon in some of the groups up to 70% of people will go home and pop a cork,
right?
As their stress management function,
right?
Yeah. So I mean, from our point of view, mindfulness is a really powerful alternative.
Exactly, and so just to finish that little story, then those two things are about being trying to avoid something nasty or being too bound up with what's going on. Mindfulness is a kind of antidote to both of those things.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, it allows you to take that step back and realise that your thoughts are your thoughts, and you can appreciate them and you can see them for what they are, and hopefully see them in a bit more perspective, that you know they're not absolute or true or unchangeable or even permanent. And also, with the mindfulness, you're able to open the door to experiencing those negative emotions, which is something that is normal and natural to do rather than avoiding them. But because you've got that little bit of distance from them, they have less of a negative impact on you. In fact, they might just have less of an emotional impact on you. It's a little bit like turning the volume knob down. And so, you know, personally, I think that's a very interesting theory explaining why, specifically why, mindfulness actually helps.
When you're relating that to things like depression and anxiety, would you say ditto to what you've just said?
I would, I would. You know, there's very much more to it. I think, you know, depression, for me, is there's certainly some kind of, you know, nature versus nurture thing going on. So we know that you have a high likelihood of depression if you've had it in your family. Some of that might be learned behaviour from your upbringing. I'm sure some of it's genetic, about having a predisposition, the way your brain is wired, the way the chemistry works, etc. So there's that bit that you can't control. You're born with it. Then there's stimuli. So, you know, you might have the predisposition to depression, but something might never happen to you to trigger it. Indeed, something might happen to you, and even without the predisposition, you get it anyway. But those things are still external to you. So these two things are things that you can't control. And I think for a long time, people thought about depression only in terms of those two things. But I think the third thing is how you respond to those things, and that is the thing that you can control, that is under your control. And this is why it's kind of so exciting, because rather than feeling just, you know, like you're all the victim of this external stuff that happens to you, all of a sudden now we're changing the conversation and saying, okay, stuff happens, you can't control that, but you can at least have a part in how you respond or how you're set up to respond. And that's when you start getting into the whole experiential avoidance or fusion, or and there's a huge component of habit, you know, habitual thinking, all that kind of stuff.
Because so many people are medicated, how do you see the use of Headspace and mindfulness alongside medication? Do you feel that they fit together?
Absolutely. I don't know that there's been any studies into it. There may well have been. But, I mean, from my perspective, first of all, you need to find out what works for any given individual. And, you know, that's what you should be doing. Beyond that, things like the National Institute for Clinical Excellence here in the UK do spend a lot of time and effort looking at what the gold standard pathway for any given condition should be, and they take into account the latest evidence of, you know, the effectiveness, the difficulty, whether that be cost or otherwise, of providing that therapy or medication, and then on balance take a view as to whether or not something is okay to be prescribed by doctors in the UK. And their guidance on depression specifically mentions mindfulness in various ways. In particular, they think that it has a very strong body of evidence that says that it prevents relapse into depression after the event. And I'm sure as the studies continue to expand on mindfulness, I have the sense it will have more of a seat at the table when it comes to depression. But I mean, you know, from my perspective, I think people have long recognised the value of talking therapies for depression and anxiety. It's frontline treatment for mild to moderate depression and anxiety, which is the majority of most mental health problems in certainly in this country. And I just think this is one of the tools in the toolkit. I think medication is another tool in the toolkit. And the place where it makes most sense to me is actually somebody who can be so out of sorts that it's difficult for them even to engage or empathise or even see or conceive of a place where things could be better, that makes it very difficult for them to keep going with other kinds of therapies like talking therapies. Yeah. I think there's a very good place there for medication to just help them be in a more positive, you know, affect, so that they're then more open to accepting the benefits that come from all the other tools in the toolbox as well.
I often think of the medication as being like a pit prop that holds people up whilst they do the work.
Exactly. And the risk here is that, you know, you prop them up and then you don't ever give them anything else. You just leave them with a prop.
Yeah, you have to do the work.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, having done the work, you can take away that prop in, you know, controlled and appropriate way. But I don't think we do enough to get... Yeah. All the way through that, get everybody all the way through that journey.
Do you see mindfulness and headspace as running alongside psychotherapy or traditional counselling?
Absolutely. You know, as I say, I think people need to find what works for them. Yeah. I'm confident that mindfulness could and should and does work for anybody that wants to give it the time and effort and is open-minded enough to try it. But, you know, many people just can't, won't, don't know enough about it. And so, you know, my job is to try to help spread the word and corral all of the, you know, studies and, you know, create enough of a case so that your average Joe on the street who's never heard of it might go, well... That's enough of an argument for me to at least give it a go.
Yeah,
I'm assuming that's becoming an easier task for both of you, really.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, me as a kind of pretty average kind of guy who's not a therapist or a doctor, I see mindfulness, the word cropping up all over the place. I mentioned the tennis recently. Djokovic was talking about how he's into mindfulness meditation. Yeah. So it's really kind of getting into popular culture.
Absolutely.
Right, expression.
Absolutely.
Right.
And.
From my point of view, it's halving medications across the board.
Right. Yeah. So you do then wonder, you know, what the pharmaceutical companies must make of it.
Okay.
But, you know, you're absolutely right. And it's also going beyond healthcare now. So clearly the health benefits are not necessarily just about psychological ill health. Apart from the fact that it can be preventative of that, there's also the physical benefits with respect to reduction in levels of stress hormone, reduction in blood pressure, which is, you know, a higher risk for cardiovascular disease and so on and so forth. And, you know, the other big place is kind of workplace stress. This is number one cause of sickness absence, you know, the knock-on effect in terms of work hours lost and, you know, the UK PLC and all of that means that there's a potential huge application here of mindfulness. And so you're starting to see it crop up in the business press more and more and more.
Yeah.
And now Arianna Huffington, the founder of the Huffington Post, has started this thing called the Third Metric. So it's...
Yeah.
Basically, what she's doing is she's trying to construct the case to business that says that the old way of thinking about what improves the bottom line on the, you know, accounting sheets, mm-hmm. in terms of working harder, working more, being connected 24/7, actually, we've gone past the point where you're deriving benefit from that, and you're now starting to get... actually, it's undermining your own success because people are so frazzled, so trying to multitask and splitting their attention between a million different things that actually they are less creative, they are more stressed, they're off sick more, and you know they don't function as well at work. And this isn't just sort of it makes sense and if we're a good company we're going to be good to our employees and do this. She's saying actually no, if you really work this through, you can quantify the financial impact on a company's bottom line from effectively frying their staff. And so she wants to, you know, generate more acceptance of the idea that, you know, you need to look after the well-being of your workforce because when it's optimal, that's when your company is working at its best. And mindfulness is potentially a big part of that.
We've talked about that a lot in our discussions, haven't we?
The
Gandhi line about... I meditate an hour a day, except when I'm really busy.
Then I meditate for 2 hours a day.
Yeah,
you've got to look after yourself, eh?
And one of the questions that came up, which is a common one, is that if I'm going to do these things like meditation and mindfulness, I have so much to do in my day, it creates an extra stress on me. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions always is, what's the difference between meditating for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes? Yeah, what would you say about the length of time that people should attend to mindfulness practice?
Sure. So that's a great question. And there's two parts. One is about the amount of time that you sit down for in one go.
Yeah.
And the other is about how frequently you do it.
Yeah.
So the studies on the physiology of the body and the stress response in particular show that you start getting the beneficial effects of relaxation after about 5 minutes. So that should be the minimum.
Yeah.
Most of the studies looking at the effectiveness of mindfulness on what something in beginners focus on sort of 10 to 20 minutes. That seems to be about the sweet spot. So from our perspective, trying to get everybody out there to do this, we think it's somewhere between 5 and 20 minutes is the right amount. You know, seasoned practitioners of meditation will commonly sit for 45, 60, even more minutes, and that's absolutely fine. The thing is, you know, from the perspective of your average person in the street, if you tell them to sit down for an hour a day, they're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, given that you're starting to get physiological benefits at 5 minutes, and between 10 to 20 minutes is long enough to teach them in bite-sized chunks how to do this stuff, but not have them sitting for so long that they're like, oh my God, is this not done yet? Or I just can't afford this time.
Yeah.
We think that's about right. Between 5 and 20 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, from a personal point of view, the only way I can do my meditation effectively is to get up early and do it between 5 and 6 in the morning.
Right.
And the day eats it.
Exactly, and I think building it into your routine is the way of doing it. That's what I do. You know, I do it in the morning after a shower before I have breakfast, because that is, every day, that's the same.
Yeah.
My evenings are not always the same, my days are not always the same, but my mornings are almost always the same, so that's where I can just slot it in.
That's where the habits come in, right? That's
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the other perspective is actually, it's less about how much you do in any given sitting, it's very much more about how often you can do it. If you can do it every day, if you drop a day here or there, you know, it's not such a big deal. If you do it once a fortnight, you're not going to have any effect whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you literally, you can just get into the habit of doing it every day, A, you're learning in small, manageable, bite-sized chunks every day, but B, it's becoming a habit.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing.
Yeah. One of the other questions that people come up with commonly is it okay to practice headspace alongside religious belief? I mean, very often people that are doing things like yoga, that's okay, they understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a part of their yogic experience.
Mm-hmm.
But from a Christian or a Muslim or a Jewish point of view, how would you look at that?
Yeah, well, you know, absolutely, why not? The thing people need to remember is that, you know, meditation is a tool, is a practice that's been around for thousands of years. That's a lot of R&D.
Yeah.
It works. What it is a tool to train the mind. It is used by many different people in many different ways to train the mind to do many different things, and that's absolutely fine. We're using it in this perspective as the training tool to teach people how to be mindful. Being mindful is something that you can do every minute of every waking minute of every day.
Yeah.
You don't have to be meditating to be mindful.
Yeah.
And ideally, that's where we want people to get. So I don't see that there's any kind of conflict between doing meditation, particularly this meditation, in which, you know, Headspace is careful to make the product entirely secular, because we're not trying to exclude anybody.
Yeah,
and none of the benefits here derive from anything to do with religious or spiritual beliefs. It's just a technique for training the mind. And therefore, you know, as that's the case, absolutely, you can use it in conjunction with anything else that helps you.
So would you see it as being more scientific than in any way religious?
I think it's a human exercise that has stood the test of time like no other.
Yeah.
You know, science, as we would talk about it in the Western world, has only been around a few hundred years, but all the evidence so far born of that science corroborates its value.
Yeah.
But from my perspective, why would human beings keep doing something for that long if it didn't work, whether there's science or not?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I see it as something that has stood the test of time in the way very few things else have.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just pretend it's magic and enjoy it anyway.
Yeah. Whatever you want, whatever you need to think about it to make it okay, that's absolutely fine. for me, it's just, it's something that you do, and if you do it every day, some really great things can happen.
Is there any evidence for people maintaining practice rather than dropping off?
Yes, so what we find is that of our subscribers, something like a third use it every day. Two-thirds use it every 1 to 3 days. And, you know, we're always looking at reasons for why people drop off and also, you know, things that we can do to help keep them engaged. You know, from the perspective of the benefits that mindfulness brings, this is one of the other great things that are coming out of the, you know, randomized controlled trials, is that a lot of the benefits are seen quite quickly after training, but also are maintained over quite substantial follow-up in ways that other therapies before haven't done.
Yeah. Okay, last bit then.
Sure.
Where's Headspace go? Mm. Where's the goals? Where's it going?
Well, you know, it sounds kind of slightly trite, but I think it's absolutely true. What we want to do, as I said at the beginning, is improve the happiness and health of the whole world. And I think we'll know when we've done that, because when looking after your mind, when doing something proactively to look after your mind, is seen as seen of in the same way as brushing your teeth or having a shower, or, you know, it's just part of the essential daily routine that everybody accepts is the right thing to do and good for you, then we will have improved the health and happiness of the entire world. And so we are going to keep going until we can get to that point where it's just part of the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you see that being able to be brought into education? I mean, you grab them younger, then it becomes the habit of life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Why not? And, you know, we're getting involved in research at the moment that's, you know, initially looking at mental health in younger people. So we're looking at doing a study looking at OCD in children between the ages of 5 and 15. I'm particularly interested in seeing what benefits, if any, there might be from applying mindfulness training to ADHD, which is a, you know, big and exploding thing. But, you know, just conceptually, if you teach people who are really young how to do this, that it just becomes normal for them, then they will benefit from that for the rest of their lives. And everybody that they interact with will benefit from the fact that that individual has a bit more of a balanced perspective on, on, you know, life. So everybody wins, and the earlier you get to them, the more that's the case.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean,
I'm just going to say maybe there'll be a few less military helicopters flying around when everyone's
there. Who knows? Who knows?
Sirens blaring.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, certainly from my point of view, I'm always encouraging people to use the Headspace app, and great to iPhone and Android. And so many people use it, and the benefits are palpable.
Yeah,
and I do see a huge reduction in medication, but a huge reduction in anxiety levels in all kinds of ways, in teams, in the workplace, but also in relationships. And
absolutely.
Stuff like that. So from my point of view, it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, we're just a quick plug. We're working on version 2.
Right.
And version 2 is, you know, lots more great content.
Yeah.
Around the actual guided meditations, but also we want to improve the personalization of the journey to the individual, and clearly everything in the world is moving in the direction of kind of social and community stuff, so we want more components of that to help people stay engaged with their journey.
Yeah,
cool. Look forward to that. I mean, I love Headspace for the meditation part of it, but also the design and just the, I mean, I'm into that.
It's easy to use, isn't it?
It is.
It's engaging.
It's beautiful.
It's good. Yeah,
so we're going to carry on plugging it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you for coming.
Yeah, it's not Dave, at all. Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for your time. Some links, getsomeheadspace.com.
Yeah, or even just headspace.com.
Oh, that works. Cool.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You know, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, all the usual places.
Yeah, we'll put all those up on the site so people can.
Yeah, we'll put some links in the show notes as ever.
We had Emma Watson tweeted about the app a little while back. We didn't know that she was using it. And 8.5 million Harry Potter followers crashed our servers. I think it's the only time we've ever been happy to have IT problems.
Right.
Yeah, you know. Brilliant.
Big brand ambassador.
Absolutely,
And just Andy, who's the founder, he's in the States. He's setting up over there
as well. Yeah, absolutely. Andy and Rich both. So they're the two founders. And so they just opened the new office in the US, so we're now truly an international company.
Actually, he might be. Is he getting interviewed on a big? Is it Dr. Oz?
Yeah, that's right. He's on Dr. Oz. I'm not sure exactly when. It's in the next few weeks sometime. But we had the Horizon here a few weeks back. We've got Dr. Oz over there.
Can't believe he chose that over our little podcast.
I'm sure he didn't have to choose between the two.
We'll get him next time he's over. David, Doctor, Doc. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Thank you.
And best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Well, there we go. That was pretty interesting, hey, Sean.
I think it's amazing. Amazing. What a depth of knowledge that man has. Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, you mentioned that all the research papers that are coming out on mindfulness. Mm. We're just scratching the surface, surely, of all of the work being done.
Yeah, yeah. But on that basis, he was mentioning that we have one a day that's coming out. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Which means not only are there a lot of people engaged in the research, but there's people are actually coming up with real results. That's why people are getting excited about it.
Yeah. And the data, I'm sure, that Headspace are getting from, well, how many people are using the app, whether it's, I'm sure they can track kind of who's using it daily, that kind of thing. Yeah. It's pretty. They're building a huge amount of data there.
I think that was really funny when he was talking about how the lady from Harry Potter movies, I can't remember her name, Hermione Granger, the actress.
Yeah.
She crashed the website by tweeting the fact that she was using Headspace.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there were quite a lot of celebrities that do meditate. Yep. Not perhaps all that use Headspace yet, but maybe they will. They've got an office in LA now, so I'm sure they're knocking on a few actor doors. But there are a lot of kind of ambassadors for meditation kind of coming out of the woodwork now.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys like Hugh Jackman. I mentioned Jerry Seinfeld the other week, who's been meditating for 40 years.
We even have Mick Jagger on the list.
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, Paul McCartney.
The Beatles kicked it off big time.
Yeah. Yeah. So meditation is something that many, many more people are doing than perhaps we realise.
I wonder where it will take us, all this.
Well, the TM lot reckons that if they could get 6 million people meditating at the same time, that collective power bank, that mind bank, would be so powerful that it could change the course of human destiny.
Mm.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know. We'll only find out when we get there.
Hopefully we'll find out soon.
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay. For more information about the work we're doing, livingthepresent.co.uk, headspace.com for all the Headspace stuff, and have a look on your smartphone for their app, which is beautifully designed. Apparently version 2 is on the way soon, which will be cool to see. And that's it. We obviously thank Headspace for their time, don't we?
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was good. And head over to our podcast number 23, where we're getting into meditation.
Yeah, we chat at length after the short version of the interview
about
meditation. And I think it's almost an hour-long episode, that one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Blimey. So you can start.
People have been saying to me they want longer episodes. I know. There you go.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I've got to edit that thing. Damn it. Okay, right, we'll leave it there for now. We'll see you all soon.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Ed.
See ya.
Bye.